You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. We are also available on the internet at www.cjsf.ca. And if you want any information, you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.
How do we become a sustainable world? As the stakes for our survival continues to rise, so does our global consciousness. We are in the midst of a great spiritual awakening and are laying the foundations for a happy, peaceful, just, and sustainable world. With clear vision, determination, and a positive attitude, we are making sustainability happen. The transformation is already underway. You are listening to Sustainable Futures.
Good afternoon. I'm Kim Tay.
And I'm Ryan Fletcher.
On this week's episode, Ryan speaks with Burnaby Mayor Derek Corrigan in the first of a two-part feature about the City of Burnaby's environmental initiatives.
If you're going to be looking at how you develop a community, one of the first things you want to do is reserve the areas that are to be protected.
We also hear from people on the street on what they think of green space in Burnaby.
And what does it mean to come to a space like this within the city?
A lot, because it's a place that you can relax and get some downtime, which is sorely needed in Vancouver, Burnaby area.
And we also caught up with Louise Kanjian from Sustainable SFU, who spoke about this exciting new campus group.
Sustainable SFU is a student-run group with purpose to educate and spread awareness to the community about sustainability and environmental issues.
Welcome to this week's episode of Sustainable Futures.
Glad to be here with you.
How are you doing this week, Ryan?
Oh, I feel good.
Oh, good, good. We've got a packed show today, as usual. You interviewed Derek Corrigan.
Yeah, it was really a great experience. I was really happy to meet a politician and really like him. I didn't think I'd actually ever really enjoy, and feel inspired by a politician.
Must have been a unique experience.
Yes. and an elected one, too, one that actually got into office. You know, the ones that inspire me are usually the ones that don't get many votes because they don't have much backing or anything like that. So it was really, really, for me personally, it was a very inspiring experience. So here is the interview I did with Derek Corrigan, and he's going to be speaking on the City of Burnaby and sustainable initiatives.
This is Ryan Fletcher on Sustainable Futures with Mayor Derek Corrigan of Burnaby. Thank you for offering us your time here today. It's a real honor and pleasure.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be able to talk to your audience, many of whom are students and are probably very interested in these issues. After all, we're talking about their future. They're the people that are going to inherit the decisions that we're making right now, so it's crucial that they be informed and influential in the way we proceed over the next years.
What does sustainability mean to you?
Well, sustainability is a term really that has been developed to deal with our choices for the future in a way that balances the different objectives that we have in our society. Sustainability to the Lower Mainland and to Metro Vancouver has really been based on the image of a three-legged stool, that in order to support the kind of future that we want, we need to consider the environmental issues, we need to consider the economic issues, and we need to consider the social issues. And achieve a balance between those different often competing aspects of our society to achieve what we call sustainability. You need economic sustainability, environmental sustainability, and social sustainability to make a complete society. And so achieving that balance is something we're working hard to deal with in our city and right throughout the region.
Okay. So how do you do that? How do you make something sustainable in the framework of a city?
Well, I think that what you do is you change the way you think about issues. It's that you want all of your staff and your citizens and your elected officials to not simply look through one lens when they're considering decisions and when they're making choices for the future. You want them to consider the environment and make a choice that's not going to be harmful to the environment, but you want them to balance that against the social sustainability of your city and the desire of people to live a good life. That is, that you might balance a park with recreational facilities. You also want to be able to achieve jobs in the community and economic development, because people can't live on the environment alone. As most of us have had to bring aspects of the environment under control to be able to produce a life. One of the easiest ways to think of that is that in order to live, you need to farm. And in order to farm, you need to change the environment around you. So we've gone well beyond the idea of being hunters and gatherers to being far more productive in the way that we accommodate our interaction with our environment. And I think that issue is one that all of us are concerned about and want to try and balance within our communities.
So what are some of the more sustainability conscious initiatives Burnaby has going on right now, as it is such a large topic in the general media?
Well, I think that when you look back in the history of British Columbia, one of the most critical decisions in regard to sustainability was made by the New Democrat government of 1972 to 75, in which they decided to have the Agricultural Land Reserve and establish the Agricultural Land Commission to ensure that we protected our agricultural land well into the future. That decision was probably prescient. It was well before its time, and it protected much of the land that we have in the Lower Mainland and throughout British Columbia from the incursion of development. That decision is one that has been built upon over the last three or four decades. And protecting agricultural land has become critical to all of us, not only in the Lower Mainland, but in the inner regions of British Columbia. In Burnaby, we protected agricultural land. Is that we have some of the highest production market gardens right here in our city. And in fact, in some areas, we've restored agricultural land. We have a major cranberry farm, for instance, that really came in as a result of us making a choice to protect land in the Big Bend area. We are making the conscious decisions to establish and continue the kind of decision making that allows you to have a more complete community, that you're able to support within your own community the needs of your citizens. Now, Burnaby obviously was well developed by the time the Agricultural Land Commission and the reserve came in, but we are part of the greater metro area, and so we've been working to try to protect the agricultural land throughout the Fraser Valley and ensure that that remains there for us to be able to grow and produce food locally. In our city, we have taken a very aggressive position on parks. 25%, one quarter of our city, is park and green space, and that's been protected by referendum.
How does that compare to other municipalities in the area?
Well, Vancouver, including Stanley Park, would be at about 12 or 13%. New Westminster, about the same. So we're double the neighboring core municipalities.
And I find that's quite visible, too, when you go on the SkyTrain.
You really can see the green space in Burnaby. And we've done things like Simon Fraser. Simon Fraser was originally given by the city of Burnaby to the university. We gave all of Burnaby Mountain to the university in order to encourage the university to establish here in Burnaby in the 1960s. The university built up inside the Ring Road, but they also had control over the rest of the mountain. We saw the potential for that mountain to be subjected to the same kind of provincial government policies that we're seeing now. That is, that the provincial government would have been very attracted to development on that mountain, particularly with the price of land, the pressure on increased density. So they might have made a choice that they were going to expose that land to development. Instead, we purchased the Simon Fraser interests in the Burnaby Mountain Conservation Area back from them. And so we gave them money and land for development in order to retain control over the Burnaby Mountain Conservation Area. And that,
so,
again.
So does the university have the whole mountain, or is it now the city? And they just
city
have what
it.
They use right now?
City owns it.
So the city owns it. Okay.
City owns it. And we gave it to them for a dollar, and then we bought it back for about $20 million. And,
yeah.
But it is a decision we don't for a moment regret, because we took control of Burnaby Mountain out of the hands of the provincial government and put it into the hands of our local citizens. And by referendum, we dedicated it in perpetuity to be a conservation area. So it's decisions we've made to reacquire land along the Fraser foreshore. So we have almost all of the Fraser foreshore in public access and created Fort Park. And that's been a series of purchases and trades with the private sector to ensure that we get as much of the Fraser foreshore as we can, because we know that they're not making any more of it. And maintaining it in public control is critical to us being able to enjoy it and to protect it.
Mm-hmm.
Same decision has been made on the foreshore on Burrard Inlet, as we've made acquisitions along Barnett Beach, for instance, and we continue to make acquisitions to protect our interest in the foreshore. Deer Lake Park, we've spent literally $100 million purchasing private lands around Deer Lake Park to ensure, again, that in perpetuity those lands are public access and part of the heritage of our children.
That's quite impressive. You're kind of ahead of the game, making sure that you have what you need. I imagine developers are coming in all the time. Is this something that you're faced with?
All the time. Developers want to make a buck. And particularly given the geographic constraints of the Lower Mainland, is there's a certain desperation in their eyes when they're looking for new potential developments. And there's a desire to influence the political system as much as possible to make that land available.
Mm-hmm.
By dedicating the land and putting it in the hands of our citizens through referendum, we really have taken considerable pressure off the politicians and made it virtually impossible for the development community to come in and change government and get what they want. It is virtually impossible for them to be able to overturn the kind of reserves we've done in our agricultural land, in our park and green space lands. It's like a big game of SimCity, you know, to put it in terms that a lot of students will understand, is that if you're going to be looking at how you develop a community, one of the first things you want to do is reserve the areas that are to be protected, to reserve mm-hmm. your environmental areas, to reserve the areas that have wildlife and habitat, to protect the public interest in having places, even though we accept greater density, places where people can go and commune with nature, can have an opportunity to get away from the hustle and bustle of daily life. We want to be able to ensure that there's a balance achieved, not only in the sense of a balance in the community, but a balance in people's lives. And so protecting green space and parks is really a critical issue to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Then your development can occur around those decisions. And it's easier for the public to accept that development if they know that there are areas that are protected, and they begin to see that, well, 25% of the city being protected is a reasonable compromise. The other 75% is going to be available for people to live in, for commercial and industrial right. use, for roads, and, you know, the other necessities that we have to make a vibrant community.
Okay. Given its geographical location, is it difficult for Burnaby to make autonomous decisions when it shares a border with all the other municipalities, sort of to have autonomous environmental decisions?
Well, we're in the center of everything.
Yeah. You know,
we're the geographic center of the Lower Mainland, and certainly being in the center of everything means that you are surrounded by other municipalities, and there may be the potential for conflict to occur between our various goals. I think that we've done a wonderful job in the Metro Vancouver area of accommodating the aspirations of individual municipalities, while at the same time keeping our eye on the big picture and how we're working together to achieve the kind of goals we have as far as our environment is concerned and social and economic sustainability. We're geographically constrained. When you think about the mountains on one side, the Pacific Ocean on the other, the U.S. border on another side, and then within that, constraints of agricultural land that is protected on an ongoing basis, is really our geography doesn't give us a lot of choices. We have to mm-hmm. make decisions that are made in cities that are 4 and 5 times our size because of the geographic constraints. We're making the same decisions that are made in New York or in London with only 2.2 million people, and that's because we're geographically constrained. It is like a funnel in which the small end of the funnel is the downtown urban core, and the large end of the funnel is agricultural land and green space. We have to wind through that process and create the ribbons of development and human interaction that protect our environmental values and respect the geographical constraints. So that means that we're making decisions that are probably far more mature than our age would indicate. And we just don't have the options they have in Edmonton or Calgary to keep growing out, to create ring roads and spokes and ring roads and spokes as you move out from a center core. We have to look at our decisions as being far more complicated and difficult. But on the other hand, look what we've achieved. We've achieved probably the most livable region in the world. We're consistently ranked as one of the top two or three cities in the world. We're always, you know, competing and viewed as one of the cities that is on the cutting edge. And we keep achieving that. I often talk about our city, Metro Vancouver, as being really the Athens of the 21st century. We're a city that's bringing together people from all over the world, from Afghanistan to Zanzibar. We speak 100 languages right here in our city. We are a tolerant and democratic society. You know, all the great cities of the world have been built on immigrants, have been built on people coming together to learn from one another, to be educated and to educate others, to extend their knowledge and their creativity. And we're one of those cities that is going to rank with the Athens and Rome's and London and New York as a great city of the world. And it's hard to see when you're there, but we are drawing people from around the world because of what we're achieving. And so I think the future is extremely bright.
What changes might be around in Burnaby in 5 years? What would you like Burnaby to look like?
Well, some of the things that we're going to be dealing with over the next years that are going to affect, I think, our everyday decisions are the peak oil crisis. You know, the reality is that...
Peak oil.
We are running out of fossil fuels. And the decision-making process is going to be significantly different over the next years as we come to the conclusion that the fossil fuels just aren't available to us. I know everybody's looking out there for some magical solution, you know, in producing energy that will allow us to continue the same lifestyle. But I don't think that's the reality. I think that we've reached probably the zenith of our fuel supply, and that we're going to have to make different decisions. And those decisions are going to involve much more public transit, much more use of bikes and walking. Even just the economics of the issue is going to force people to different choices, and people are going to decide that they need to live closer to where they work in order to be able to get there more easily. Those decisions being made, I think, are reflected in the choices our young people are making already. And as you see, less cars, more use of transit, more young people who are looking to live in higher density, you know, that have recognized the fact that they may not be able to achieve the dream of the single-family home with a three-car garage and the white picket fence unless they move to Chilliwack. And so their lifestyle is going to be much more like the lifestyles in London or New York, where you're going to live in apartments in a denser environment. But the reward for that is a much more vibrant urban lifestyle, one that's got far more cultural amenities and far more opportunities for interaction. So we're going to be the kind of city that reflects probably the new world, the world where there's far less opportunity to rely on a single occupant vehicle and suburban lifestyle and much more urbanization.
You're listening to Sustainable Futures on CJSF 90.1 FM. This is an interview with Derek Corrigan, Mayor of Burnaby.
What does the city do to help small market people, small market merchants and farmers and whatnot?
An interesting aspect of our society has been the corporatization that's occurred. You know, there is a desire for big business to get bigger, and there's a desire for business to control a market. You know, the ideal for most businesses is to eliminate all of their competition, to achieve a monopoly, to be able to be the sole source of anything that they're supplying. So while the free market system espouses the value of competition, they work very hard to eliminate it as quickly as possible. So, you know, we have to work, I think, harder from the point of view of public policy to protect small entrepreneurs and to give people an opportunity to be able to be creative and to support themselves by providing services or products within our community. I think that more and more people are looking for that kind of personal service and are willing to pay more in order to ensure that they're dealing with someone who's local, someone who's producing local, someone who is who is able to give them the kind of personalized attention that is necessary for them to be able to feel that not they're not just a consumer, but that they're part of a community and they're part of a society. So I think there's a difference that's happening. We're seeing it here in our community, and I think we're seeing it, you know, worldwide, that people particularly in the developed part of the world, are looking for a more personal connection with the things that are being supplied to them. And I think that's coming from young people who are interested in those things, who have grown up with a considerable degree of corporatization. They've grown up at the McDonald's and the Walmarts and are looking for something different in the future. So what we try to do in our city is to encourage areas that will allow small entrepreneurs, who I deeply admire, small business people, to be able to be successful. I was a small business person, and I know how difficult it is to make your payroll, to pay your rent, to hustle your business, to do your accounting. You know, all of those issues that small business people do are what create the kind of entrepreneurship and creativity that builds communities. It's much different when you're talking about big corporations. You're talking about bureaucrats, essentially people who weren't the creative influence that created the business. They were, in fact, people who have assumed control of the business and are now corporate bureaucrats interested in how much money they can put in their own pocket, right, as opposed to the public interest. Small businesses have to be more respectful of their customers and more attentive to their customers, because they know that this can turn around on them very quickly if they don't provide that kind of service. So building community is part of, for instance, the Heights area in Burnaby on Hastings Street. It has been a business improvement area where small businesses have been making the choices for themselves about how their community will grow and talking to us about important issues like parking and amenities and how future development will occur. We're dealing with small entrepreneurs, small business people who are, and many who may very well be of larger businesses but are community oriented, who are looking at ways they can improve their opportunities. And working with them creates an entrepreneurial spirit, and it creates the kind of sense of community. People are moving to the Heights just to be close to those businesses. They love to shop at the small bakery and butcher shop and the stores that are along that street. They love to go to the coffee shops and restaurants. Mm-hmm. So trying to create that as opposed to the mega malls is a difficult process, but one that I think is being achieved. At Simon Fraser in Universe City, we're looking at the same thing, is to encourage entrepreneurs to set up in Universe City, to have small businesses that are become engaged with their own community and become a part of their own community. It's difficult. It's difficult for many small businesses to wait through the process of people becoming engaged. It's difficult for them to compete against the Walmarts and Costcos that are out there. But I'm beginning to think that because of walking and cycling and people looking to shop closer to home and to shop daily rather than monthly, that there's more opportunity for those small businesses to be successful. We need to ensure that our businesses have an opportunity to participate in the decisions. And, for instance, in our agricultural community, our market gardens are the highest production farms by acre of any farms in British Columbia, which goes to show you can be very successful even in an urban center in producing agriculture.
Where are these farms? I'm not aware of any.
All along Marine Drive.
Oh, okay.
If you go down to Marine Drive, and that's where I do my shopping. My wife does her shopping for vegetables is the various market gardens, and there's a number of market gardens that are open all summer. If you haven't been there to shop, do go, because it's a wonderful experience. Now, a lot of the stuff is produced right there or produced in greenhouses locally, but some that they can't get is brought in or imported. But certainly you're dealing directly with the farmers that are producing food right here in our community.
Oh,
and it's a wonderful experience, and it's inexpensive. So the good part about it is you're getting fresh produce, and you're getting it at a very inexpensive price.
Mm-hmm. And it's not moved very far.
Well, for a lot of it, it's not. Some of it, obviously, in order to provide the kind of variety that's necessary, is the markets are having to import some of the things that they bring in. But you're generally getting local produce, either produced right in Burnaby or very close to Burnaby.
Okay. I'm imagining that often there'd be a conflict in decisions, in civic decisions, between environmental health and greater economic growth. If this is true, how's that been faring with the civic decisions?
Well, we've just developed an economic development strategy in Burnaby. I was the chair of the committee in 1990, which probably shows you my age, that did our first economic development strategy, and it's been incredibly successful.
Mm-hmm.
So we revisited our economic development strategy last year in 2007, reviewed it after some 17 years, and said, where should we go now? What are the directions? In 1990, we targeted what we believed were the knowledge-based industries in developing communications, information technology, the movie industry, tourism, particularly sports tourism. We targeted a number of areas where we thought we could grow over the next years.
And knowledge-based.
Knowledge-based. It's certainly the discovery place, which is where Electronic Arts is. We saw those as being our potential. And we saw that right in the center of the city, if we produced a very livable community, one where people were engaged and enjoyed living, that we could attract those businesses who were seeking a place for the knowledge-based industries, for professionals who were paid well and received a considerable benefit from their job.
It sounds like Athens again.
Again. It's exactly the kind of image we have of ourselves as part of the urban center. We recognized that we had the advantage of location, 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 and that we had land that hadn't been developed. So we now have over 50% of the movie studio space in British Columbia right here in Burnaby. There are over 5,000 people in our community that are employed directly in the movie industry. There are at least 50 or 60 businesses that are directly involved in the production of movies. So that's a big industry, and one that's been very profitable for us, and one in which we've made considerable effort to make our city movie-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
We're the center for telecommunications. We have leapfrogged off of TELUS, which is a big employer here in Burnaby, employing another 5,000 people. And TELUS has drawn other communication businesses as people want to go where the big communications businesses are. And so we've developed a lot of spin-offs that have really been quite successful here. Ballard, with their fuel cells, made their home in Burnaby. And so the fuel cell business has been here and has been extremely productive and are challenging some of the ideas we've had from the past as well. The hydrogen vehicle may not be around the corner as stationary use of hydrogen, and even the use of hydrogen in powering computers is growing because small businesses are taking that on.
Mm-hmm.
The biotech industry, an area that is an unexpected growth area for us, is biotechnology. Metro McNair and other laboratories here have really come along and have created a lot of opportunities for new business and new products in pharmaceuticals and other biotech areas. Our universities, we've got Simon Fraser University right here in our community that is creating a great deal of knowledge-based opportunities. People are graduating from SFU and they're establishing businesses right here in Burnaby that, again, are on the cutting edge. BCIT, same thing is happening. So, we're using our educational institutions to be able to build economic development. In fact, SFU was part of our cluster analysis that we did in economic development, working with us on an ongoing basis to examine where we'd established clusters of businesses and how we could utilize those clusters to develop further business. These are the kind of economic development challenges we've been part of. Now, in the context of the environment, we've already, as I've said, protected 25% of our community. And by protecting those environmental values is that we don't find that the conflict is severe. We don't find that we're measuring, having set that goal first and established that goal, we don't find that we're in conflict because people are not challenging.
Now.
Exactly. Yeah. It's been done. And so the issue of conflict with the environment is very small. And in fact, what we've established, if you look at the Big Bend area of Burnaby, which really is the area, industrial area around the Fraser River in our city, it was developed by Canada Lands. And Canada Lands has put in, there's a number of businesses down there. Future Shop, for instance, is down there. Ballard is down there. There's a number of communications businesses. that area has been developed in accord with our environmental values. And mm-hmm. so instead of simply producing an industrial park, the industrial park has been produced with creeks, bioswales, habitat protection. So really what we've done is we've created an urban business park that respects the environment and contributes to the environment, producing habitat for the animals that live in that area and the birds. And though in some ways the companies have been brought kicking and screaming into the 21st century, they've recognized that our will was unshakable. And what they produced is they produced something that they are very proud of. It ended up on the front page of their annual report. The engineer who was responsible for the development unfortunately died during the course of the construction of the area at Glen Lyon.
Mm-hmm.
But he was so proud of what he achieved during his life, and particularly in the latter part of his life with this development, that Canada Land set up a chair overlooking the river to recognize the epiphany that he'd reached as a result of being involved in this project.
Right.
So there's no reason that business can't respect the environment, can't work hand in hand with the environment, and in fact, in many ways, enhance the environment by the development that we undertake.
We've already sort of addressed this, but maybe we can elaborate more because I think it's of interest to people. Pressure from developers, how's that dealt with?
I don't feel any pressure from developers, and that hasn't been an issue for me, and it isn't an issue for council or for our staff. The image that developers can get something through pressure is false. I think, particularly in our city, but I suspect in other cities, while developers may want to make a dollar, is that we're accountable to the public, and the decisions we're making are transparent to the public. And when you make a bad decision, you can doom your electability in the future, because people understand the kind of values that are important in our communities. And if a development is outside the values we've established, then I think people recognize that pretty quickly. Our planner, who just retired, told me that one of the things he enjoyed most about working in the city of Burnaby was our patient persistence in our goals. That we were constantly, holding to the kind of vision that we had set, and ensuring that we rejected development that was outside that vision, that we weren't prepared to compromise our vision, and that we would wait until the development came that was going to suit us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really been an achievement in our city. Again, if I go back to Simon Fraser University and Universe City, there is a development that we worked hand in glove with Simon Fraser and challenged Simon Fraser to be the best they could be, to examine new ways of thinking about development. Not that Simon Fraser couldn't make money out of the project, because they did, or that they couldn't achieve the kind of community they wanted to support, the students and staff at SFU. But what we did is challenge them to do something that was going to be groundbreaking, that would be a development that was admired, that people from around the world would look at what they'd achieved. So we challenged them, and they challenged us, as to how we could make this development work. And I think both of us are very proud of the result that's occurred there. Many of the decisions we've made in looking at apartment buildings that have secondary suites, for instance, or that there'll be loaner cars that are available, or that transit passes will be included as part of the fees that are paid. I mean, all of those things are things that are innovative, and they really should happen at the incubators of new ideas, universities. Universities mm-hmm. should be at the lead in trying to make those things happen. And then they fall out from the university into the general community because right. they're successful. So, we're blessed, I think, in many ways by having developers who've adopted our vision and who are seeing that the things we're doing have made a difference. We've got developers in our city who are doing a green building, for instance, and it wasn't us that suggested it. It was them that suggested a green residential building, because they know the markets out there, and that by making green decisions, they're going to be able to market that building as being suitable for people who want to make a change in their lifestyle from a single-family home but want to be more environmentally conscious. So Adira, who are a very famous developer in our community, are doing that job. Boza, another company that's developed here on a consistent basis, has really adopted our vision. And their next building that they just announced last night is a LEED standard building, and they are looking at achieving the same environmental goals in a in a residential office complex that we've tried to achieve in civic buildings. So I think that people are getting it. And as they get it, is that all of us become more productive. So while there may be a view on some people that the glass is half empty at all times, as we kind of look at it as half full and filling quickly.
This has been Derek Corrigan, the mayor of Burnaby, and this is Sustainable Futures. I'm Ryan Fletcher. Well, thank you very much.
Coming up on the second half of the show, Voices from the Street, this week's news, and also an interview with Louise Kanjian from Sustainable SFU. So after hearing from Mayor Corrigan that 25% of Burnaby is made up of green space, I wanted to know what other people thought about the green spaces in Burnaby, why they liked green spaces, or sort of what their opinion was about green spaces. And then also I wanted to know what percentage of Burnaby they actually thought was made up of green space.
And here were their answers.
What brought you to a green space today?
Quiet.
Walk the dogs.
The weather. The green.
Well, I wanted to be in a green space and not in the city.
Because it's sunny.
Well, it's really important.
Yeah.
Why would that be?
Well, it's such a large area. You actually don't see any houses from here, and you can forget about the city.
It's just a nice day, and I guess we just wanted to enjoy outside in a green space.
And what does it mean to come to a space like this within the city?
A lot, because it's a place that you can relax and get some downtime, which is sorely needed in Vancouver, Burnaby area.
Precious. I think we get much of our energy from the natural energy of the trees and everything. I just enjoy the outdoors.
Do you think that having green spaces like this just outside of the city or within the city is important?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, without a doubt, like, just adds so much to the environment. It's like getting closer to nature and everything. It's totally appreciated.
Well, for me it's necessary to relax, to just be able to sit outside and enjoy nature and not hear all the cars and everything.
Do you think that having spaces like this in a city is important?
Yeah, I really think so. I think it's, you get, you know, sometimes too caught up in commuting back and forth from work to home and stuff, and it's just nice to have some place close by that you can actually hang out and sort of get away from the city, I guess.
What percentage of Burnaby do you think is made up of green space?
I would say about 30%.
A fifth?
I know a lot. I know it's up there ranked high in the province, so.
Care to wager a guess?
Ooh, maybe 60%?
Not enough. And it's not accessible enough, especially with a bike. What percentage? I have no idea. I guess if you count Burnaby Mountain and Burnaby Lake, it's actually quite a bit, maybe like 20% or 30%.
Oh, probably about 20%?
Actually, 25%.
What? Yeah. Seriously? Wow, I guess there's a lot of green spaces I haven't seen. It's a lot. I guess Central Park and, wow.
Oh, okay. I was going to say 25.
Yeah. Very good. That's a lot.
Well, still, that's quite bad. A bit, yeah.
I think it needs more.
That's good. Very, very good. I just love it.
So that was really fun. I like the people you interviewed. Sounds like they were having a great day.
They were having a great day. It was a nice sunny day, and I think people really enjoy being outside, and a lot of the people that I spoke to said similar things. You know, it was a great day. They loved being outside. It was a great escape from the city. And I think that people really think that it's important to have those spaces close to the city or within the city so that, you know, it's an easy escape for them if they just need to get away for a little bit.
Yeah, it certainly is. It would be it certainly is convenient to get away. I mean, I know myself, I can just hike up the mountain here to SFU, and that's sort of an escape between my home and getting here.
Exactly, and I live in southeast Vancouver, and I live right behind a golf course, and there's a path all the way around the golf course, so there's lots of trees and green space over there as well.
Right.
What I did find really interesting with the people that I spoke to is that nearly all of them were dead on in terms of, you know, guessing what percentage of Burnaby is green space. Most of them said 20 to 30%, except those people who said less than 5% or 60%. But, you know, it was really cool that people actually knew approximately how much of Burnaby was made up of green space.
Yes, so that's really good that people sort of have a feel of it. And I guess when you have green space around, you get a sense of where you are perhaps, is what that is an indication of.
I think so as well. So yeah, it was great to talk to people on the street and hear what they had to say about green spaces.
Coming up next is a bit of an interview on sustainable space at SFU. So maybe students listening here wondering, well, okay, we're up at SFU. Where's the sustainable space at SFU?
Yeah, and SFU is doing some great things in terms of sustainability. And I'm glad that they have developed a group dedicated to sustainability, because I think that there is so much dialogue at universities that goes on about sustainability that it doesn't make sense for the campus to not be sustainable. It
right.
needs to be, sustainable in itself. So I think that it's great that they have these groups that are working towards that goal.
Okay, so I caught up with Louise Kanjan and we had an interview on the Sustainable SFU group. So this is Ryan Fletcher from Sustainable Futures, and we have Louise Kanjan from the Sustainable SFU group. And welcome to Sustainable Futures.
Thank you for having me, Ryan. I'm excited to be here.
What is Sustainable SFU?
So Sustainable SFU is a student-run group with purpose to educate and spread awareness to the community, both campus and off-campus, if we can reach them, about sustainability and environmental issues and related issues as well.
When did Sustainable SFU start?
It started 5 years ago with three very eager undergraduate students, one of them who carried it out till this day, Candace Bonfield.
Mm-hmm.
And their purpose was to bring the same sustainable and sustainability to SFU, to make SFU a very sustainable campus. And they started out, they want to lobby for a sustainability office in SFU, just like UBC has, and I think UVic has one as well. And that didn't quite fly too high with the administration. So instead they decided to settle on an advisory committee, sustainable advisory committee, which they were successful.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, so this is over a course of 5 years, they lobbied for a sustainable coordinator position, which mm-hmm. they also were successful. And quoting Candace, we're slowly pushing the university into warmer waters. So maybe next could come the sustainable office, the sustainability
yeah.
office. But it's progressing slowly.
So you're starting to gain momentum.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. So it sounds like a very new initiative.
Yeah, the group itself is still very young, only mm-hmm. been around for 5 years compared to, UBC's office that has been around for 10.
Mm-hmm.
STEM SFU will hopefully use student body to help push the university into warmer waters while the mm-hmm. advisory committee goes directly to the administration.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the advisory committee, where do they come from? Where is that?
So the advisory committee is also volunteers. There's some key SFU administration staff on the committee. So there's a couple of grad students on the committee. There's some staff from the Sustainable Community Development Program at SFU on the committee. And there is one senior Sustainable SFU member on the committee who right now is doubling as the coordinator,
mm-hmm.
who is Candace Bonfield. So it's very fitting. I'm hoping that in the next couple of years we can get some, not just senior members from Sustainable SFU, but some actual members from Sustainable SFU on the committee as well. So that'll
mm-hmm.
be one of our initiatives this coming year. But yeah, that's what they're made up.
How do people get involved with Sustainable SFU
and SFU.
The advisory committee? Is that a separate process or is that?
So, the advisory committee is separate, but I don't think it's open to the general public as much as the student organization, Sustainable SFU. You can always just come to one of the meetings, see
mm-hmm.
where you can get involved, and just join. It's very open, very easy process.
Okay. And where do people go to get involved?
www.sfu.ca/little-squiggly-tilde sustain. That's our website currently.
Okay.
And on there we have posted our meeting minutes and our meetings and our meeting times. So anybody could just, and the place obviously. So anybody could just go to that website, see where our next meeting is, and just show up.
So what are some goals for Sustainable SFU?
Right now, our main goal is I'd like to continue with the festival that we started last year.
Mm-hmm.
It was successful. We got huge feedback. We made huge connections with some community members,
mm-hmm.
Organizations, businesses. And I would love to keep that. And the only way we could do that is if we did the festival. We repeated it annually. I mean, if there was 2-year breaks, they wouldn't take us seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to continue that this year. And that's my main project right now,
okay.
is recruiting volunteers to come and take on these highly involved executive positions as directors and coordinators and plan the festival. Mm-hmm. It's up for discussion. I have a bunch of goals in my head, but it's up for discussion. For example, I think the next step would be to help sponsor some high school sustainable groups so they can start high schools or local high schools with sustainable initiatives and, you know, sort of mentor those high school students and starting those groups. That would be one of our goals.
Oh, that's a cool idea.
Yeah, it would be very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we have to sort of look around and see what UVic does, what UBC does, what some of our neighboring universities have been doing.
Now, this festival, now I was there, and it was a very good and what I thought was, successful and a really fun festival.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you'd be able to talk a little bit more about the festival for those listeners that were not there or don't know about it.
Mm-hmm. So the festival, the point of it was, again, it stuck with our initiatives to raise awareness about sustainability, to promote sustainable ways of living, behavior. So we had one day where we invited different organizations and different businesses from around the city, or around BC even. We had Tree Brewery, for example, come out from Kamloops. Or Kamloops was their headquarters, anyways. And we invited them up here to come and hold tables. So we did some tabling and just open up their businesses to whoever decided to come to the festival. So we call that the learning exchange. Students could come, staff could come and go from table to table and see what businesses do or what some of the options are. For example, we had West Coast Imaging come. They're a local business that recycles or remanufactures toner cartridges. And some people don't even know that you could do stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the purposes. That was one aspect of the festival. We also had a marketplace where we had just food and clothing vendors come up.
Mm-hmm.
Who had, you know, obviously their businesses was carbon neutral or sustainable because of their products or the way that they practiced.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so that was very exciting. We had speakers as well, either from the different organizations or student speakers to come and speak about sustainability throughout the day. And we had music and we had belly dancing and we had face painting.
Mm-hmm.
So we tried to keep it was supposed to be positive. Come out, have fun. It's a festival, not just a you know, guilt trip you about how you're so bad for driving to school every day.
Yeah.
Kind of deal. It was supposed to be fun. And it was. It was very fun. Hopefully this year we can make it more than one day. If we have enough execs and enough manpower to work at that and make it maybe a 2 or 3 day festival. Have more events going on. Last year we wanted to do a composting workshop, which we didn't have time to fit in. So maybe I can do that this year. But we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
That's very exciting. Idea. Lots of good ideas coming out of this group.
Lots of good ideas. Yeah. Thank you.
That was an interview with Louise Kangian from Sustainable SFU. And now for this week's environmental news. According to a study released by Biodiversity BC, British Columbia's biodiversity is doing all right, but just barely. Because of a relatively short industrial history and mountainous terrain, the state of BC's biodiversity is slightly better than other countries, but this does not mean that BC is out of the woods. The report warns that biodiversity here in supernatural BC is at risk of rapid deterioration from increasing human threats. The major threats to biodiversity detailed in the report include climate change, agriculture, urban and rural development, recreation and aquaculture, to name a few. The report calls on the province to make drastic changes to ensure the integrity of ecosystems in the future. Biodiversity BC is made up of government ministries, such as the Ministry of the Environment and Environment Canada, and non-governmental groups, such as the Nature Conservancy of Canada, Pacific Salmon Foundation, and the Land Conservancy of British Columbia. The Great Wall of China is serving as inspiration for another Great Wall, the Great Green Wall of Africa. 3 years after it was initially proposed, the Great Green Wall Initiative is finally underway. This initiative includes the construction of a green belt or green dam to help combat desertification. It is hoped that the enormous wall of trees to be built from east to west Africa will help stall the southward spread of the Sahara Desert. Desertification is an ongoing concern in Africa, which is afflicted by frequent droughts. The initial phase of the Great Green Wall will cost $3 million US and will result in a stand of trees 7,000 kilometers long and 15 kilometers wide. The G8 summit wrapped up this Wednesday in Japan without any major breakthroughs about climate change. G8 nations agreed that global greenhouse gas emissions should be halved by 2050. But differences between developed and developing nations prevented specific targets from being made. G8 leaders praised themselves over the progress they had made on climate change, while environmental groups criticized them for maintaining the status quo. Leaders attended a climate change meeting on Wednesday and were joined by 8 more big polluters, including India and China. At the beginning of the G8 summit, Canada ranked second to last on the World Wildlife Fund's G8 climate scorecards for the G8 nations. The United States ranked dead last in eighth position, and the UK scored big in first place for not only meeting but exceeding Kyoto Protocol targets. And summer is the time for vacations all over the world. But this summer, with the skyrocketing cost of gas and plane tickets, why not stay a little closer to home? Northern Alberta offers some unique attractions that make it truly a one-of-a-kind destination. In fact, TravelingAlberta.com raves about what a rare treat it is to visit the oil sands and see the endless expanse of bitumen-laden sands or smell the powerful scent of oil from refineries. You can even let go of your stress with a luxurious, gritty oil treatment. Or so the satirical website created by Greenpeace says. This website, www.travelingalberta.com, aims to bring awareness to people about the tar sands. Greenpeace created the website in response to the campaign by the Canadian Association of Petroleum Producers and the Albertan provincial government to change public opinion about the tar sands and clean up their image. And just a reminder about tomorrow's event hosted by Vancouver Peak Oil. The event will feature a panel discussion with some of Metro Vancouver's top journalists about how the media is, and isn't, reporting on the global energy shortage. The event will take place at BCIT's downtown campus tomorrow from 7 to 10 p.m. Tickets are $10 in advance and $12 at the door. For more information, you can check out vancouverpeakoil.org. That's all for this week's environmental news.
Well, that about wraps it up for this episode of Sustainable Futures. I hope you've enjoyed the episode as much as we have in creating it. I'm Ryan Fletcher.
And I'm Kim Tay. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you would like more information about our show, you can check us out on the web at www.sustainablefutures.ca.
And you can also contact us directly by emailing iamsustainable@gmail.com.
Well, we hope you tune in next week. We're on Fridays from 3 to 3:55 in the afternoon. We'll leave you now with a short clip from a song called Excuse Me, Your Planet is Burning, written by local Vancouver artist Andy Vine.
And I'm wishing you a sustainable future.
Excuse me. Your planet is burning. Excuse me, it's really on fire. It may not seem hot where you're standing, but believe me, the flame's getting higher. I really don't want to disturb you. I know that the party was fun, but I think if you'd like to get out alive, it's time to start cooling it down. 'Cause this fire is all of our making. This fire is fueled by our greed. This fire will end when we come back again to only consume what we need. Excuse me, I see you're not listening. I wonder if you really heard, or if you'd rather believe in some strange fantasy that says that the fire's not there. Can't you see that the ones who deny it are the ones who would have most to lose? It's their fear of losing their wealth and their power that makes them deny and confuse. And this fire is all of our making. This fire is fueled by our greed. This fire will end when we come back again to only consume what we need. Kids, please be true. Do that love in your heart and make a new start on a lifestyle called keeping.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. We are also available on the internet at www.cjsf.ca. And if you want any information, you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.